Revolution Radio.
The journey begins to fun, health, and freedom.
Syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here.
What are you going to do, bleed on me?
I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Hey, good evening.
Good evening, Deacon. How you doing?
Good, good, good. I was just running a moment late here, and I was going to pull up a good opening song for us, so give me a second.
All right.
Damn, Bluetooth keeps going in and out. I think I got to fix though. That drives me crazy.
Speaking of.
Yeah. Let's see what we got here. Yes. Fun stuff. Okay. Oh, it's been one of those days when technology gets upside down, you know. It's just kind of crazy.
Been one of those weeks. Oh, dear.
Something about the, maybe the planets had something to do with that, huh?
Maybe so.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That not can prove, but empirical observation. Let's see. Something kicking.
That's me. Hit my screen. Well, I'll tell you, what's that called? Whatever can go wrong will go wrong. What do they call that?
Mark Twain? I don't know.
Mark Twain.
Some great guy.
Anyway, while I'm pulling that up, I did give you a list. There's a lot of stuff to go over tonight. Got some Reverend guitars. We've got a few amp sins and some recording stuff. And I don't know if you had a chance to peruse that.
No, I didn't look yet. I was too busy doing some things.
Okay.
I trust you. So well,
that's scary.
Like to live dangerously.
Yeah.
For fun.
Let's see. Oh, here we go. Get something real nice here. Got to break the ice with some music. I'll tell you, well, we talked about this before while this is loading up. I don't think I could get through a day, forget about a week, not even a day, without that. And no, that's not the song we want to listen to. without listening to music. So.
Airplay. This is like I haven't played for almost 2 weeks. Picked it up. Uh-oh. Oh boy.
Uh-oh. Well, that's rough, man. Okay, here we go. Here's something real fun.
It's time.
Well, we got the most of it. There's some good ripping in there. Good guitar pick.
A mess tonight. What's the line you said? Was it the shadow of emotion that crossed your face, or was it just the trick of the light? Like that line. Yeah.
There's some good lines. There really are. There's this phenomena where you think you're hearing something, but that's not what he's really saying. And that's called a mondegreen, M-O-N-D-E-G-R-E-E-N. I don't know where they get the term, but yeah, that's what it's called. And there's this new song. It came out of that Eurovision contest. And I believe it was a song that won. And everyone was hearing the chick singing, "Fart in My Face." And I don't know what she was really saying, but it really sounded like that. In Telegram.
Especially like with bands like The Who, because they're British, and Roger Daltrey has a hell of a like Cockney accent, and some of the stuff, his vowels and stuff, it took me a long time to acclimate to that, but once I did, I kind of figured out what he was singing.
Yeah, they're hard to understand sometimes. It really is. And it kind of brings it around full circle from a philosophical viewpoint. You know, well, then in that case, lyrics don't really matter if you just get up there and start singing like you're singing words, but you're not really. You know, you're just kind of not really scatting. You're making vowels and syllabications and everything. You can get away with it if you're writing music.
Think about music and songs. It means something different to everybody who hears it and listens to it. So it sort of goes with the territory, yeah.
Yep.
Three times I listened to a song and memorized the words, and I thought it was about something, and then I would go and actually look up the writers, you know, the lyricists or the players. It was absolutely nothing like what I thought it was, you know?
Not even close. just goes to show. That's the music for me. But you got to have some words, you know. I mean, there's got to be some kind of song going on, you know. So just go la, la, la and have fun.
Well, we'll have to do a show on lyrics sometimes. I mean, some of these lyrics, some of these guys have some balls, some of the things they say in these songs, man.
Yeah, and some lyrics are really...
Otherwise, yeah.
Some are really artful. It's actually very good poetry sometimes. And so it varies. It's who it is. Who's doing the writing?
Where do you want to go here first? You want to go, as far as amps go, I've got Smokey Joe Bonamassa Blues, Dumble Helix. I got Marshall JCM 800, a little brother from UG Valvovitra. That's a Marshall.
Dumble and Helix is hollering at me. I want to see what they can get.
See, we get colored Dumble tones with Helix, Joe Nathan Cordy, and then we've got the Bonamassa Dumble. So, do you have a
preference? I kind of gravitate towards Dumble and Helix, but you know, whatever. They're all good. Anything with Bonamassa is good.
Well, they're both Helix.
Oh, okay.
Let's see what this one sounds like.
This channel is supported by TrueFire. TrueFire is an online library of lessons from some of my favorite players. There's thousands of lessons on there. You can use the promo code JNC40 to get 40% off of any of their courses.
'60s and '70s, it was called a tape echoplex.
Yeah,
I've been listening to Corey Wong's podcast, and he's got a bunch of cool stuff on there. There's an interview with Eric Johnson. There's stuff with Mark Lettieri. Just loads and loads of really cool interviews that I need to work my way through as I get, you know, if I'm driving, whatever. I was listening to Joe Bonamassa on there, and Joe Bonamassa's also got like a bit of a rig rundown on his TrueFire course as well. So that's where I got the Dumble settings for this from. But Joe talks quite a lot about mid-stacking his amps, and basically what he does is has something like a tweed amp and then a Dumble amp. That seems to be mostly the key thing he talks about. He talks about in the past as well that he could do this with like a Vox and a Marshall, just two different types of gain structures essentially. In this here, I wanted to use the Gramatico tweed. I think in the video that I was watching, he was using a brown face kind of vibraverb. The Helix doesn't have one of those, but experiment with like a Fender tweed or blackface type thing was basically the gist of what I think he was going for. Here I'm using the Gramatico LG Bright Channel. So he's using the Bright Channel on most of these things. Volume at about 6, bass at about 5, tone at about 5, treble at about 6, channel volume at 6.9, master at 8.3 there. Then I'm using a 1x10 US Princess because he uses two 1x10s in the vibraverb that he had, and miking up the 906, position 2.8, distance 2, 45 degree angle. We just split this and they're both going down middle, something like his live tone would be. Then using the Gramatico GSG, which is, you know, Gramatico's take on a Dumble, drive at 5.5, bass 5, mid 6, treble at 5, presence at 6. I think presence on an actual Dumble is called accent. Then the channel volume at 3 because it's quite loud. Master at 4.4, mid switch off, rock switch, OD switch, OD drive at about 6, OD level at about 6. Bright off, the FET boost off, the preamp boost or preamp bypass off. And then cab-wise, we're using the EVM. I think Joe has used an EV speaker at points. I think the Van Wielden cabs had EVs in them. But he also has his own signature speaker that I think he uses as well more so these days. 906 dynamic. Cap edge, 2 inches away from the cone. And there you go with that. He also uses a Boss DD3 for delays, I found from a forum post, with everything at 12 o'clock. Now, I don't have a Boss DD3. I'm tempted to sort of experiment with this just to see. But on that setting, I think the ultimate amount of delay you can have is 800 milliseconds, and it's halfway. So I put it at about 400. Feedback I've put fairly high, and then mix it about 21. But that's just on the Dumble side of things. Normally, he says that you would have reverb on the other side. So you might have your reverb on your Fender and your delay on your Dumble. I've actually run out of DSP here, so I can't actually do that. I've got an SD1 up front. And now, he typically uses the Overrated Special, which is a modified Tube Screamer with more mids and more bass, supposedly. So what I thought was, let's use the SD1 because that doesn't roll off as much bass as an actual Tube Screamer, but you could experiment with the Tube Screamer as well. But yeah, he has on his Overrated Special, generally he has the drive and level at 12 o'clock and then he rolls back the tone a bit, apparently. Altogether, this gives you quite a chunky. But warm kind of tone, which is kind of the thing that I've noticed about Joe's playing, particularly in the TrueFire video. It's like it's got quite a bit of gain. It sounds like quite a lot of gain, but it's also quite warm. And he says in the videos that he doesn't like having too much kind of squish and compression. And so that's part of the reason he does this two amp thing, as well as having sort of a more mid-rangey voice and then one more high headroom voice.
Thank you. used to run or comment quite a lot on his forum, so you can probably find some more tips and stuff on there if you're interested in kind of getting closer to Joe's tone. This is just kind of the starting point for me. I think you could consider switching this out for any other kind of tweed amp, the Fender part of it, or any other kind of black face amp as well. They're in that brown face transition period, I think, or as well, he uses now the twin tweed twins. So give that a try, and it's just a really... And for your cleans, just roll your Les Paul back to 3, basically, is what he actually does. Cleans your volume at 3 and all the way up for your leads. Gumroad will be the place to grab this tone if you want it, and I'll catch you in another video soon. Cheers.
I see.
Let's see this guy. Go ahead. Here. His name is Eugene.
No, I'm sorry. I'm Eldevalo.
Huh?
Sorry,
his name is... Gosh, what's his name?
This channel is supported by TrueFire.
John Nathan
TrueFire
Cody.
Is an online...
He's
John
a good guitarist. Excellent guitarist.
Mm-hmm.
This channel is supported.
So I take it that Joe Bonamassa does probably like Eric Johnson does. He amp switches. He probably has at least 2 different amps, and he has a switching, foot switch.
Yeah. Radio makes a good amp switching box.
And the dump tone, I know what he's trying to get. He was getting in the neighborhood a little bit too much compression on it, but you could get that tone, I think, with like a real clean high gain drive pedal, like a full tone. Get that real clean dumble sound. You could probably do it if you don't have a dumble, but I don't know. That Helix didn't sound quite as good as some of the other amp sims and box we've been dealing with, you know.
It's good, but the differences are kind of very close after a while. He was using a Helix Stomp. He wasn't using a regular Helix 4 unit. And I don't know if there'd be a difference in the quality of the sound with that. The Helix Stomp is 700. It's kind of on the low end. Then you're getting up to 1100 and 1600 for the others.
Another one here, John Nathan Cordy. Another killer double tones with Helix. This is the other one. We played the Bonamassa. Let's see what this one's like here. Same guy. Same.
This channel is supported by TrueFire. TrueFire is an online library of lessons from some of my favorite players. There's thousands of lessons on there. You can use the promo code JNC40 to get 40% off of any of their courses.
Sure. We'll be right back.
So I would say probably the Gramatico GSG 100. It's based on a Dumble ODS. It is a new amp, as you'll probably be well aware, for 3.6. Up until this point, I think the best choices for kind of Dumble tones were things like the Lone Star, so the Cali Texas Channel 1, Channel 2, and also, of course, the Line 6 Litigator. This amp, of course, looks a lot more like an actual Dumble. But the one downside that it has versus those other two amps is that it's actually pretty tricky to dial in. So I wanted to kind of show you a few little options that I was enjoying. So to start off with, I kind of started off with Joe Bonamassa's kind of lead tones. I'm playing a Strat here. So this is kind of like that smoky, all open Dumble kind of tone. You'd see this drive here. I think this is kind of something that you want to experiment with depending on your guitar. You see, as you back it off, you get a little bit of a less aggressive tone all the way up. I'd start with the kind of tone stack sort of midway. I've got the bass here at 5, mids at 6, treble at 5, presence at 6 as well, because what I'm doing later on with the cab is kind of taking off some of the high end. On the real Dumble amps I've tried, there was quite a lot of presence to them. This doesn't. Seems to be influencing things hugely here. I think I've got it on 6. Channel volume, generally with the Gramatico, you're going to want to keep a bit lower because basically it gets very loud. The master at 4.4 here, anything over 5 in real life would probably be too loud for most situations. And plus, it basically is a master volume amp. It doesn't make a huge difference where you've got the master set in terms of positive tonal differences anyway. I've got it on the rock switch, jazz. Typically, in real life, I've really only seen people tending to use the rock thing. OD switch on, and here the OD level actually does make quite a big difference kind of tonally. I guess this is how loud it starts to hit the master section, or it might be placebo, but kind of 6 and 6 seem to be the Joe Bonamassa thing, and was useful. Bright switch off, FET boost off, and the preamp boost off. I could use that if I wanted to get a bit more so I'd use that probably as like a solo boost potentially, or you know, if you wanted to get a bit more without having a drive pedal. Sag actually does make quite a big difference here. 3.6 is the stock. If you want to close things off a bit, gives it a little bit less of a stiff feel. Tab choice that I made here is the 1x12 open cast with the 67 condenser. Now, this is a slightly darker voice. If you want a bit brighter, 906. Also a good choice. And I guess even darker, ribbon mics. I find the 67 condenser quite balanced, and a high cut here at 5.1 without that. It might just be a bit too bright for you, so adjust that to taste. And I think it's the overdrive tones that are a little bit more difficult to dial in. So what I wanted to do was jump over here. These were all the same to start with. And basically for my clean tone, what I'd be doing is just turning this switch off. So then... And the other thing that I'd do is probably take the drive down to something like 6 maybe, so that we're definitely getting clean tones, and then maybe just chuck on an LA Studio compressor. Maybe with a bit more gain. Let's just experiment a little bit further with this. So I've taken the drive down. I might just notch it up a tiny bit more. So I think we're getting some clipping then, which I don't want. I want it to be clean, clean. So the other thing I'd do is just take up the channel volume to compensate. And what I also think I might do is to take possibly a bright switch or bring up the high cut here for the clean. So if I go... Basically, it sounds pretty good for cleans in general, so you're probably not struggling with that, but the drive. Responsive to volume knob stuff as well. So what I might do on this snapshot one would be to have that basically be our lead, and then this one just kick on the PAB in case we wanted kind of two drive. And then clean. So I think the good news is that you don't really need too many blocks to get great tones out of the Gramatico. You just need to spend a bit of time, I think, tweaking it to your liking. And, you know, you can get those kind of Robin Ford, Larry Carlton, Joe Bonamassa, all these kind of, you know, great tones are in there somewhere. John Mayer as well for your kind of clean stuff. So just a case of, I think, experimenting with different cab choices and you know, experimenting. Potentially you might want that high cut if you're finding things too kind of fizzy. In terms of like really tight gain structures and stuff, I think that's not necessarily what the dumbbell excels at, but it definitely does have this really kind of nice. Singing kind of vocal quality to it. So I'm really quite a big fan of it. It wouldn't necessarily replace the Litigator for every single circumstance. I think the Litigator still kind of has a really amazing feel to it and doesn't necessarily have as many pitfalls. Grab place this. I'll chuck this into the folder. It's called Gram Dum, and I'll catch you in another video soon. Leave a comment if you've got kind of other settings that you've been enjoying with the Gramatico so that other folks can maybe try some of them, and I'll catch you around in other videos potentially. Cheers.
Those are pretty impressive, those Helix stomps. I was just looking at it at Sweetwater. You can, for $700, you get that plus a whole suite of computer software that you can use with it. And the nice thing about them is a little screen is you can just move things around with your finger. It's like a touchpad. They give you a whole lot when it comes to microphones and cabinets and all that. I'd always go with a ribbon mic on it. But whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I don't know.
Something you got to test with, you know. It's I don't know how well you can get a true conception of what it really is and how it operates just watching a YouTube channel. It's helpful, but it's another thing entirely to have it right in front of you and have it hooked up to some PA speakers and all that. Or a guitar amp, just cut the cabinet off on the Helix if you're using an amp because you already got your speaker. You don't want to have two speaker simulations going. Or a simulation plus a real speaker. That wouldn't work out.
Yeah, that's something you could struggle with, you know?
Mm-hmm. But, it'd be money well spent, most likely. I'd probably go for the big four unit, you know, the LT, the $1,100 one or something. Not that I could do that, but that's what I would do if I had my druthers.
It doesn't sound as clean as some of the other units we've been listening to. It kind of sounds like it has a blanket over it. You know, I played in a band with a guitar player who had one, and that was my impression. It sounded like a blanket. It was, you know.
He had a Helix?
Lively.
He had a Helix?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they've been around. I know that they've come a long way with them. And, you know, depending upon how far back in time that was.
Anyway, let's see.
What else we got?
Let's do something fun. We got about 15 minutes left in the first hour. Why Eric Clapton stopped playing Gibsons? 10 minutes. That's with that.
Before you start, I remember he remarked about something. He said, I started playing Strats, and I knew they didn't have as much sustain. And I'm going, well, why'd you do that? I like sustain, but whatever.
Let's see what these guys have to say. This is the Guitar Show channel on YouTube.
Hi guys, it's Goose here, and in this video we're going to find out why Eric Clapton stopped using Gibson guitars. From Eric's early career, he built his reputation as a guitar player playing through Gibson electric guitars. In fact, he played them exclusively between 1965 up until about 1970. Clapton's first Gibson was... or cherry red Gibson ES-335. In fact, he would keep this guitar for the next 40 years and sold it in an auction in June 2004. And of course, in June 1965, Clapton bought his very famous Cherry Sunburst 1960s Gibson Les Paul. Okay, guys, before we dive into this, it's worth noting that Clapton never completely abandoned the Gibson brand. In fact, only recently he was using a Gibson L5 for select numbers at concerts. And he's also played a Gibson Chet Atkins acoustic on stage. And from time to time, he uses Gibson models in his studio. He purchased Brownie secondhand at Sound City in London on 7th of 1960. Before Cream flew to New York to record Disraeli Gears. He had been promising himself one since seeing Buddy Holly playing a Maple Net Stratocaster on television as a boy. And he had been blown away by Buddy Guy's use of a Strat on an album called Folk Festival of the Blues, which was released in 1963. Later, he went to see Buddy Guy at the Marquee in London, and around the same time he saw Steve Winwood playing the same instrument. Significantly, also Jimi Hendrix used this instrument. Around this time, Eric was using the full SG in Cream exclusively. Eric didn't like the rosewood fingerboards that Fender had been putting on all Stratocasters from 1959, so he decided to find a second-hand model. Obviously, these Fenders produced a thinner, brighter sound than the fatter, warmer tone associated with the Les Paul and the SG. In fact, we didn't really see this Stratocaster until around 3 years later. And if you check out my guitar history of Eric Clapton, you can see a very interesting fact. Eric Clapton swapped the necks of a Fender Telecaster and his Brownie Strat. You can see the Telecaster being used at the Hyde Park concert with Steve Winwood and the band Blind Faith. Eric had said of the Stratocaster, "What I always looked for on a Strat was a maple neck that had been worn out. If it looked brand new, that it was obviously you know. It was like a restaurant. If it is lots of people there, you know it's going to be good food. So I just thought if it had all those kind of worn out patches, it meant that it had to be, you know, well favoured. And this is why Eric prefers a maple neck as opposed to a slabboard or laminate rosewood neck." Brownie was first used on stage on the tour with Delaney and Bonnie Bramlett. And you can see it here in this photo from 1970. This would mean that the Strat was put back together before this date. So the guitar was put back together between mid and late 1969. And we know this as the Tele was last seen with its neck on July in Helsinki, while the Strat wasn't used until early 1970. Eric said in Guitar Player magazine in 1970, "I still play a Les Paul, but with Delaney and Bonnie, I use an old Stratocaster I've acquired, which is really, really good. A great sound. It's just right for that kind of bag I was playing with them. I just set the switch between the first and the middle pickups. There is a little place where you can catch it so that you can get the special sound somehow. I get more rhythm and blues or rock kind of sound that way." Eric nicknamed this guitar Brownie, and it appeared with him on the cover of his first solo album and across the back cover of Layla and other assorted love songs. So ever since that Delaney and Bonnie tour, Eric has been using the Fender Stratocaster as his main guitar, with the intention of counteracting his star cult following that began to form around him after Cream. Clapton assembled a new band composed of Delaney and Bonnie's former rhythm section, Bobby Whitlock as keyboardist and vocalist, as a bassist, and drummer Jim Gordon. It was his intention to show that he was a member of an ensemble. It was around this period that Clapton was increasingly influenced, and specifically the album Music from Big Pink. Eric stated, "What I appreciate about the band was that they were more concerned with the songs and singing. They would have 3- and 4-part harmonies, and the guitar was put back into perspective as being accompaniment. That suited me well, because I'd gotten so tired of the virtuosity, or the pseudo-virtuosity thing of long, boring guitar solos, just because they were expected. The band brought things back into perspective. The priority was the song." He continued to use Brownie, and it was used on the whole of the album Layla and other assorted love songs, including the title track Layla. When a radio interviewer asked Dwayne Allman how he could differentiate that of Eric's and Dwayne's playing, Dwayne replied, "I play the Gibson and Eric plays the Fender. all the way through. If you can tell a Gibson from a Fender, you can tell who plays what. And if you can't, you just go ahead and hallucinate. From the 1970s, for recording, he would also be using the guitar he became most associated with. The Fender Stratocaster, nicknamed Blackie. It was actually a hybrid of three guitars that he bought secondhand a few years earlier, in 1970, at the Showbud Music Shop in Nashville, where he purchased six or seven vintage Strats for about $100 each. Then, back in England, he gave one to George, one to Pete Townsend, and another to Stevie Winwood. The others he kept, taking the best bits and turning them into one guitar, a black-bodied maple neck instrument, circa 1956 and 1957. The introduction to the book The Stratocaster Chronicles contains a piece by Clapton himself. Clapton says, "I never did meet Leo Fender, but I wish I had. If I could go back and somehow talk to him about the Stratocaster, I'd say, you've created something that can't be bettered, really. How did you do that? I know there were prototypes with the Telecaster and the Esquire and some early experimental stages, but nevertheless, the fact that he got to this conclusion so quickly is remarkable, isn't it? Leo Fender was so far in advance of anybody else developing the Strat to the point where it just can't be bettered even now. My hat's off to him. The reason why I hadn't played Strats earlier was that the necks always looked so narrow. I thought I won't be able to bend any strings, no room, but in fact I was wrong, and any Strat that I'd seen up until that time had a rosewood fingerboard, and I had an aversion to rosewood fingerboards. Don't ask me why, even though some of my earlier guitars had them. I'd always preferred ebony. I like the silky finish. Of course, when I got my hands on a maple neck Strat with a white fingerboard, I was surprised at how easy it was to play. I had a lot of influences when I took up the Strat. First there was Buddy Holly and Buddy Guy. Hank Marvin was the first well-known person over here in England who was using one. But that wasn't really my kind of music. Steve Winwood had so much credibility, and when he started playing one, I thought, oh, if he can do it, I can do it. Picking up a Stratocaster makes me play a bit differently. I find that over the last few years, I play more with my fingers because of the way it sits on the guitar. I don't feel the need to use a pick quite so much as I would with any other guitar, where the bridge sits higher off the body. With the Strat, the bridge is almost flush with the guitar, so my hand rests on the body, part of my heel rests on the bridge, and then my fingers rest on the scratch plate. It's really easy to play either way, but I found more and more that I'm using just my fingers. It's got those famous lead tones, but it's so versatile, you can use it in any kind of rhythmic sense, as well as great big power chords, all that really light kind of Talma Motown sound with very little volume. Unlike most other electric guitars, it sounds almost better when the guitar's volume knob is on 2 or 3, really unamplified and quiet. I really like the old coil pickups, especially that middle and bridge combination. I use that for the solo in Bell Bottom Blues, which would be a classic example of that sound. But I've got those noiseless pickups now and the active circuitry, and I get so many different sounds coming out of the Stratocaster that it's hard to compare it with any other guitar. My other guitars, I only visit them from time to time. I rarely use anything else but the Strat. So guys, in conclusion, I think that Eric found a new voice playing the Fender Stratocaster, and it would really fit the style of music that he was playing from the 1970s onwards. And I feel once he developed his voice on the Fender Stratocaster, it was hard for him to return back to the Gibson guitar. Thanks guys for watching this video, and I'll see you soon. God bless.
Interesting article. I hope he didn't have too much trouble swapping the necks, like putting the Stratocaster neck on the Telecaster, because they don't really fit. The shape up at the very end is a slightly different. Maybe he had some help doing it without damaging the neck. He might have had to do something with the body wood. And I always like the old Fenders.
Fender, you know,
Huh?
One say here. What? That's this guitar here. I'm sorry, this one here. Fender Custom.
Do you want to roll? I mean, we might as we can.
Yeah, we're rolling.
Oh, we are rolling.
Yeah, that's the one.
There it is, right there.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
I was looking at Warren.
He just took the neck off his fret, yeah.
Yeah, but you're going to have to make some slight adjustments because they don't really fit. The tele neck and the strat neck are slightly different in shape up at the butt end where it hits the body. I'm sure, you know, with the people he knew, he didn't have any trouble doing it. But I always liked the old cigarette burn up at the top. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Up on the Fender headstock. People stick their cigarettes there. I even had them on mine, as a matter of fact. It was the thing to do, you know. And, but yeah, that's some very interesting information.
Oh, it's interesting that you say that because I've taken jazz bass necks and put them on P bass bodies and vice versa. They swap right in.
Yeah. You know,
maybe the basses are different. Yeah. You know, just bolt right on. Yeah. Same size at the butt end.
Yeah. Maybe so. You know, at least, you know, I was reading at Warmoth's site and their necks, but they're pretty much dead on facsimiles of the real Fender necks, and there was a little note about it, and so that's why I remarked on it. Not to say it can't be done, but yeah, that's some good stuff.
I don't like that last video we watched. It's kind of a lot of it's stuff that the clap. I mean, it's stuff that any player would do, you know, just trying to get their gear together, swapping out necks or different guitars or different amps and stuff, and trying to change things like that. Yeah, that's sort of the normal thing, you know. It's kind of hard to quantify though and explain, you know.
With my own personal aesthetic, I always prefer a Telecaster neck on a Stratocaster body. I think the lines of the Telecaster headstock blend nicely with a Strat, but somehow a Strat neck on a Tele body, it just doesn't groove with me. It's like I say, it's just me. Yeah, as long as it gets what he wants, that's the important thing.
Photos of Hendrix playing the Olympic white Strat. He's got a Tele neck on it, maple Tele neck. I don't know if you've ever seen those pictures.
I don't know if I have or not, quite honestly.
I'll see if I can find one and send it over to you. But yeah, he took a maple neck Tele, stuck it on the Strat, yeah.
Hey, why not? Maybe he thought the Tele necks were a little bigger, slightly more of a baseball bat, which is something I really like.
More of a D neck, yeah, chunky.
Or a U neck. An old U neck Telecaster is just delicious. They're just really deep. Back at the nut, you know, closing in on 1 inch deep. That's why it's called a U neck. That of the boat neck, which is similar, but the boat neck is more of a V.
I got a quiz for you. I forgot. Damn. It just slipped my mind.
Okay. Well, when it comes back, let me know.
It's just stuff that we used to do, you know, as kids, you know, put different speakers in, tubes and different strings and, you know, wire things up, you know.
Yeah, when we didn't even know what the hell we were doing. You go around switching tubes in an amp, you need to rebias those. You need to rebias the amp. I mean, you know, you might come out with a real cold bias, which means the amp isn't putting out a whole lot of power, but at least that's better than having a red hot bias and, you know, your tubes start red plating and you burn things out. That's why I like the THD. It's self-biasing. You can just stick any kind of tubes in it you want.
The new Ampeg SVTs, the reissues of inch reissues, and the Fender Super Bassman 300 watt tube head, they have that auto bias on it. Just automatically does. Yeah.
That's so cool because it's just more stuff to do. I remember I had a 50-watt Marshall head, and a friend of mine was working on it, and he put 265/50s in it. Well, we'll be right back.
Station Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
This is Thomas, a.k.a. a Mad Painter. I'd like you to join me Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for Open Canvas. Don't forget to bring an open mind.
Yes, folks, that's right. Bring an open mind to an open canvas. Again, that is Monday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. UFOs to government corruption. This is Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
Interested in the paranormal, murder mystery, real natural law? Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio, Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Galactic Interstellar Council on Revolution Radio Studio A, Fridays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we traverse the starseed paradigm, as expressed in the time-space continuum that we know as the divine expression of love and light. Integrating this conscious unity into the galactic paradigm. So welcome all, both terrestrial beings and galactic beings as one. So be it. You're listening to Revolution Radio.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. We are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered used at higher risk, and Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
faded to Babylon. Became the special man. Then we were sick as bad. Sticky really sang. Scooped up eyes and threw down head like some cat from Japan. He could lick on my smiling. He could leave and to hide. We came on so loaded, man. Welcome to Snow White Tan. No werewolves or spiders. While the blind fights with my elbows. Just the bigger lights to guide us. So we danced around this band. Should we pass and we played the time, jiving us that we were found out. It was his class. He was the mat with God-given ass. He took it all too far, but boy, could he play guitar. Making love with your steel. Like a lemon messiah. When the kids that kill the man, the hands will break on the dam.
Takes me back to 1972. Yeah, I remember back then. Really got into David Bowie back in those days.
What a talent.
Oh, yeah. That was such a big deal when he died several years ago.
I remember, I think I was in eighth grade. I got that album, but that was a few years after it was released. So I wore the needle out on that one, boy.
I had several of his albums. I and my friends were into him. Friends who didn't play music, people I'd just go get drunk with, you know. I get drunk and stoned.
Suffragette City. Suffragette City.
Classic stuff. Oh, what you got?
I'm trying to figure out where we're going to go from here. We got some more guitar stuff. I know I got a bunch of your guitar stuff here. Hold on a second. Let me get this straight.
Did you find anything on the Reverend?
I have a whole bunch of stuff for you.
Because the Buckshot's back on the menu at Reverend. You can buy a new one now. They said they were going to put it back in the line, and they sure did.
Well, we've got Reverend Buckshot Tone Test, got Double Agent and Buckshot Review, Reverend Buckshot Demo, Reverend Buckshot Guitar from Reverend Guitars, and First Impression, the Virtual Jeff Digital Whammy. That's that one, that guy.
He's good. Riffs, Beards, and Gear, he's real good. Fluff. He's got a huge channel. He's got near 900 videos. I've watched him a long time. And he plays. He's a good musician, and he tours and everything. So he knows his stuff.
And you want to watch one of his, or do you want to go on to the guitar stuff?
Sure, let's give that a whirl. he doesn't virtuoso out on you. He just does the music. He does what he's showing to you, and he's got a very nice delivery, very nice style. Some of these guys, they get on there and they're more interested in showing you how good they can play than really giving a good rundown on the product.
That's what I call an asshole. Yeah, I don't need something like that. Yeah. All right. So, good, but
we know they're good. That's all cool. You know, I want to learn about the product.
All right. Let's see what we got here. Okay. We have first impressions of Virgil Jeff Digital Whammy Bar. Want to do that one?
That's amazing. I even sent that to my friend in Lafayette, who's the other guitar player. I don't know if he's seen it. That is truly an amazing piece of kit. If you got $500, it's money well spent. If you like whammy bars, or just like it, you know, here and there. I've always liked hardtail guitars. I've never been a whammy bar player, but they're not without their uses. This is amazing.
Let's check it out. This is a Riffs, Beards, and Gear on YouTube.
Today on Riffs, Beards, and Gear, I check out the Virtual Jeff Digital Whammy Bar from FOMO FX. So in the world of guitar, there are really two different kinds of guitarists. Guys who like whammy bar stuff, and guys who don't like whammy bar stuff. Now, I am typically not a whammy bar kind of guy. And in the past, I have owned guitars that have been equipped with all sorts of trims. But generally, I found myself not using them because they didn't feel like my non-trim guitars that I usually use. Well, FOMO FX has fixed that problem with the Virtual Jeff Pro, which basically you can think of this as a whammy pedal on a whammy bar on your guitar. That right. Now, before we go any further, FX has sent me the Virtual Jeff to check out. I was so curious, I had to check it out for myself. However, all thoughts and opinions are mine. Okay, so I have watched a couple of different videos. I have my camera set up. I have all the connections I made. I think we will get to explaining how the pedal works in this context. I have a Fractal FM3 set up. I have the audio going. I think I have it all worked out. Currently, I am transmitting the whammy data via Bluetooth to the pedal. Okay, so the initial thing you need to know is my movements are being translated via Bluetooth to this pedal, as would a tradle on a whammy pedal. Okay, it's instead of that. So think of this as the whammy pedal part that you put your foot on. Basically, it's a whammy bar. I have not tried this yet. I think I have all, I know I have guitar audio. This is my active, so this is totally bypassed. I hear no change in tone, which makes me think I don't have something hooked up. However, let's give this a go.
It's not the way players use tremolo bars. And most players nowadays, even back in the 60s, they didn't use them all that much anyway.
No, he's just playing with it. See what it does.
That is crazy. Let's go to a distorted tone. Now, again, I don't know how this is not affecting the tone at all. I'm going to bypass this, turn the pedal off. That is crazy. What? How? Okay. Some initial impressions. One, your strings aren't actually being affected. This is a pitch shifting effect after the fact, so your guitar will not go out of tune. Now, I've spent a ton of time with a whammy pedal. This thing's the best tracking pitch effect I have ever used. It's so immediate. It's seamless. There are no artifacts that I can hear in my studio setup. Wow. That's so cool. Okay, so what are we looking at with the pedal? So how many intervals I go down is on the left, and how many when I pull up is on the right, okay, of semitones. So basically right now I have it, if I go all the way down, the range is a dive bomb, basically 24 half steps, 24 semitones, right? Two octaves. Right now I have it, if I pull up, it's more kind of like a Bigsby. It's just two semitones, a step, basically is all I'm going to get out of that, but I can adjust that by going up or down on either side, okay? And I can have this setting, and I can also have a double setting. So if I'm at a show and I'm, you know, doing covers and stuff, I can switch between the settings of the whammy itself with the push of the foot control, okay? This looks pretty extreme. Let's try this. I don't even know what to expect here. Again, I am not a whammy guy. I apologize for my horrible, horrible whammy bar skills. I am not Ben Eller. But this is a lot of fun. Okay. There's also a V capo, virtual capo. I'm going to stay on the clean tone so we can actually figure out there's like artifacts. That tracks so well. If I had an external foot switch, FOMOFX did send me this guy. So there's a blend function, which is a jack, and then there's a hold function. Now, the blend function, we could do an octave effect, like a traditional 50% wet octave effect, so an octave down mixed in with the dry signal, for example. That's crazy. That track's so good. This is a lot of fun, real talk. This is pretty cool. Okay, so let me go ahead and kind of press pause on this kind of stuff, and let's go ahead and go over how this actually works. Okay, so we have the actual unit itself, the virtual Jeff. This is stuck on with, this is attached to a base, which is in turn stuck on via some tape, some double back adhesive tape, to the top of the guitar. Now, you can place this on any guitar. You can place this on any finish, and it will not damage your finish, and you can remove the base. Now, there are videos on the website showing you how to do just that, but it seems to me that this is a low-tack double-back adhesive tape, and it you could pull it off if you wanted to, and it would be just fine. I'm not saying that's what you should do, but I'm just saying it didn't really feel like anything that severe at all, and I am not worried about the finish of this guitar. It's just enough, basically, to counteract the action that you do when encountering and using the virtual Jeff, basically. So the movements of this unit are then transmitted, in this case, via Bluetooth, which was also in the box, the Bluetooth transmitter, and it's transmitting the movements to the Virtual Jeff Pro pedal. Now, the pedal is where the business is happening, and the pedal is what is actually doing the pitch shifting. Now, I am plugged from the guitar into the pedal like I would any other pedal, and then I am selecting my parameters for pulling up and dropping down on the tremolo. And going into whatever I want. Next with belt brackets, and it comes with a couple of attached to various guitars in the box. So the Bluetooth transmitter does have its own bracket, and you could attach it to the top of the guitar as well, or you could put it in your pocket. You could attach it to a strap like a wireless unit, etc., etc. However, the tracking on this thing is flawless. I can't believe how well this thing tracks. I'm trying to think of, like, this is so well executed, and this is a lot of fun. Now, is it a replacement for the Whammy? No, because, like, the Whammy is, you know, you can't do Whammy bar, you can't do Whammy style stuff with your hand because you're playing, and you would typically use that on parts that you wouldn't be able to do by freeing up a hand, if that makes sense. Honestly, my first thought is, boy, I hope these guys make a Whammy pedal competitor, because it would be literally the best on the market, period. This would be so, so damn good if they made an actual Whammy pedal. Please make a Whammy pedal, guys, and an octave pedal, please. Compact ones, MIDI controllable, you would own the world. Anyway, the Virtual Jeff Pro is pretty damn cool. I like the fact that you can switch between the two different modes on the foot controller, and it's simple and effective. Metal housing, this is a very rugged feeling metal unit, and I like that you can place it anywhere. Now, if you care about aesthetic on your guitar, I could see this maybe you not liking this because it looks pretty modern on something, you know. You could put this on an acoustic guitar, keep in mind. So, like, would this look a little out of place on, like, some classic acoustic guitar? Yes, but what wouldn't? However, this would allow you to use your favorite guitars and still have the function of a Whammy. That's pretty cool. This whole thing is not cheap, although it's not super, super crazy, honestly, by today's standards. This whole thing is $500. I think that is money well spent, considering it tracks flawlessly. There is, I mean, if you wanted to get real picky, there might be the tiniest bit of latency. There has to be latency. There can't not be latency if you're transmitting movements via Bluetooth and stuff like that, and then, you know, the pitch effects. However, this thing feels sleek and fast. This is the best tracking pitch effect I have ever used, and I have used all of them. And I'm not just saying that. Like, this tracks so flawlessly, I am shocked. So for $500, you get the whole kit and caboodle. That's pretty impressive. And you can use this over and over again on any guitar you want forever. I mean, that's crazy. This is nuts. I cannot wait to see where these guys are at in 1, 2, or 3 years. Please make a whammy pedal, guys. This is the best thing ever. I will link down below in the description if you'd like to know more info on the Virtual Jeff Pro. And with that, you've been wonderful. I've been Fluff. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you next time.
What it does is it picks up the vibrations in the wood of the guitar, and it acts off of that and affects the signals.
It's called like an air vent or something, but I guess not. Huh?
It's a real interesting concept. And I was wondering how you would put it on, say, a Les Paul that has an arch, if you wanted to put it on that. You know, arch top guitars in general, they're not always flat right up behind the bridge. But still, it's a real interesting concept.
It's something definitely different. It's always good to check out different things and stretch your mind, your creativity.
Yeah. That's how music technology hops along.
Great. Let's see. What do we got? We want to do some guitar. Let's see. Reverend Buckshot Bimbo.
Yeah. I knew it was.
I got a couple. Which one did you want?
The Buckshot and the Double Agent sounded kind of interesting, because Double Agent's a really good guitar, too. It's more like two humbuckings. They're
for themselves, yeah. Come on.
Nice. I love that. Hey,
hello, Mark Foley.
This is Joe on Blaze. This is Electric Land with Music Villa. And hope you're all doing well out there. Getting falls on. We're getting ready. Joe wore his costume today.
I did.
And yeah. So, yes. And we are sponsored today by Moose. Well, not Moose.
By a Moose.
One of the, yeah.
It's actually a Moose.
This is
Marty Moose.
Yeah, he's working on. We talked to him.
Bullwinkle's cousin.
Big Sky Brewing in Missoula. Moose Drill is one of their brown ales, and it's a lot of fun. I have a good time with this beer. every time I smell it and drink, I feel like sitting in it's like a hot spring, and I'm at Norris Hot Springs drinking Moose Drill.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
It's old school Montana, right?
But these guys have great. Oh, yeah.
It's one of our original microbrews from Montana.
Yeah.
It's the first one that really hit big.
Yeah. Been around for a while. So
you'll see this brewery in cities across America.
Big cities. Yep. Right, lots, big cities.
Big scabbard. Let's drink some of that.
Yeah, well, you know what? Here. We've got some right here for it.
Like?
I don't know. It looks brown.
The more you drink, the better we sound.
Joe's into anything that's brown. Okay. Cheers, Justin, Austin. Here we go. Yeah. Let's all enjoy this. Oh, yeah. Man, that's
nutty.
That's nice.
Nutty.
It's nutty. It's smooth. Oh, yeah. A squirrel would love that.
Yeah. You know why I like them?
Why?
All their beers have an animal on them. They're all animal themed.
Very Montana.
I'm an animal enthusiast.
Very Montana.
They've got a goat. They've got an antelope.
It's like you're hunting. You're hunting for the beer.
I buy it basically based on the animal. On it.
Okay, cool. And the moose is great.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with a moose.
There's real moose drool in this beer. They get these moose to go out. It's a dangerous job. Moose to drool into the...
That's
and
not...
They go,
that's
wild,
not
it's wild harvested it, moose
it,
drool.
It hallucinate on the first few sips, but then it settles in. So what do we got here? We got a Reverend Guitars. These are really cool, right?
They're very cool.
Where are these guys out of?
I think they're in Ohio.
Yeah.
But...
And they're just like, you know what, we're going to make some cool guitars that we want to see on the rack. We want to do some killer retro-y kind of funky vibe.
And they're really kind of like a
combination of their peanut
and humbug. And I mean just the company, they have a my feeling is that they're still pretty small, in the sense there's not like a, it's not a giant factory, a ton of people handling these. Right. They're made overseas and they're
shipped in a foreign within people.
Yeah. They're made, like, I think the same dude, what's his, is it Z? Yeah, the little signature on the back here's Zach.
Yeah, ZS with a, some kind of L.
Yeah, I think it's Zach.
They're all hand numbered, and all that.
The one dude kind of checks them all. And,
cool.
They're really cool, man. They're manufactured overseas, and then they do the setup and make them. They're finished in the States here.
Yeah, they feel very solid. They're really nice.
They feel so good.
Now, they got a bake neck.
They have some unique features.
Maple neck here.
Six bolt, yeah, big neck, six bolt neck plate. They have this.
What's a bake neck?
Yeah.
Roasted maple neck type of thing?
Yeah, they.
Cosmetico. Yeah.
They bake it at like 300 degrees for, I'm not sure how long, but what it does is it hardens all the sugars and it gets all the moisture out. And they don't even have to finish it after that because there's nothing to worry about. And you'll never get frets coming over the edge.
What's that do to the sound?
Nothing. Doesn't affect the sound.
Little angle coming off, kind of off the body.
Oh yeah.
Cool. Blocking tuners. They design, do their own pickups.
Yeah. And I guess it with.
They all have this. Knob. This is a proprietary thing.
Joe got injured.
I did get injured. I broke my nose 2 weeks ago now. 2 weeks tomorrow. I fell down on ice. Believe it or not, we already had ice in Montana. It was our one really icy night. I played a gig.
First time on ice.
Yep. I played a gig at the filling station. It was a great gig. It was awesome and fun. And loaded out the gear. Went to unload the gear. And slipped in an icy parking lot and fell right on the
face. That's rock and roll.
And I drove
cheers
yeah
to,
cheers and I cheers drove home with, like,
was she drinking too much beer?
Way to take one for the team.
Drove home with paper towels on my nose and
that's harsh, man.
Yeah, and then the next morning I had studio time, so I had to get up the next morning and go into the studio at like 10 a.m
with a broken nose.
So I showed up like with like some beers and
brings way too much, man.
The best work comes out of damaged people.
It does. Yeah.
Good for you, Joe. Look out for his new album. Mm-hmm. You're recording. That's good. Little recording.
So yeah, let's listen. What? How's the sound on that guitar? With the roll that thing off.
Put in the P90 here in the neck. He's with it. Just with a little turn of the knob,
you can
have a humbucker or a little single coil. It's very cool, especially if you're like, hey.
I read it there. That's cool. It's pretty good tending humbucker, too. I run the 1390. It's a little hotter. Nice. Yeah.
You can kind of switch tones right in the middle of a song. It's kind of cool, or do it as like a solo thing or something. That's pretty cool. I like that. That's a fun, easy option. I don't like flicking buttons around. I just want to twist it and go.
Twist it and go.
I don't want like a volume pedal where I'm doing this. My ankle hurts.
Ankle gets sore.
And,
yep.
Yeah, I got to wear a brace and wear a full body suit. And then, but when I can just do that and just switch it around, that's an easy way of just having some extra fun, which that's what I'm all about.
Extra fun.
Easy ways of extra fun. Like sniffing glue.
Oh, yeah.
That's easy. Yep. It's in my house already. I don't have to talk to
you some
gangster.
You can't stay out of my head sniffing glue.
Yeah.
That's daddy sniffing glue.
You use the other glue, the one with the cow on it. Not the one with the X across the crossbow.
Daddy's a vegan. He doesn't do the cow glue.
Yeah.
It's straight, pure chemicals.
The one right into the factory made. Yeah.
So it's horse glue.
These are cool bodies. They're not, you know, it's got some weight to it, you know. I don't know. It
feels good, though, yeah? It's like not heavy.
Yeah.
I love these necks.
Real
my favorite thing is the neck.
I know, the necks feel
and
great.
Oh, and the 12-inch radius.
Okay, good.
The frets are like kind of, I don't know, they look like sort of a jumbo fret, but they don't feel huge.
They're unique, they're cool, you want the retro look. It's got some really small tones. Yeah, close to the picture.
Yeah, this one's really
well,
cute.
Like
right?
Beard was.
This one's got a little bit of a telly stuff going on, right? Mm-hmm. But this neck pickup.
It's a good look.
It's kind of their sort of Filtertron, Lefty Armin kind of thing, their version of that. Yeah, it's Broadtron.
Broadtron. Broadtron. A new exercise video for Broadtron. Gonna work your biceps.
Pretty warm, pretty, pretty nice.
Yeah.
It's cool. And then this is their Greasy Tea. They're kind of telly.
Greasy Tea. Somebody in college named Greasy T. He's not with us anymore. Sounds cool. That's you biting. That's you biting. But that's not much to it.
Yeah. That's not harsh at all.
Yeah. That's cool. I love that thing very much. Great one, too. You know, I got a P90 and I got a humbucker. That's kind of fun. You don't see that often, right? Yeah. Well, shoot. So, Reverend guitars, we got these at Music Villa. You know, they got locking tuners too, all that jazz. They're really cool. I really like these.
I really like
them. And they're not like $2,000 or anything.
They're very affordable. They're like a player's guitar, right? Like,
yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Take this to the gig, take this down to the neighborhood jam session.
You go to the garage, you have the garage. Oh, you know, like Richie Valens, that movie, when they're all in the garage jamming and the garage is open.
Magic is happening.
And this could be part of the magic, too. Music Villa and Reverend Guitars can be part of the magic.
The magic.
For you. Okay. Hey, let's take it out with a jam. Let's have one more sip of the Moose Troll.
Oh, yeah.
And shout out to Dustin doing the hard work behind the camera there. He's got a new band going. What's the name of the band? Do we have a name?
Yeah.
Mad Pattern. I like it. So look out for that if you're in the Bozeman area. And let's, what are we going to go out with?
Now I want to play some Richie Valens, but I can't think of anything.
Oh, man. Maybe for next time. We'll do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, we're going to do P90. Thank you.
Electric Planet Music Villa. Thank you, guys. Reverend Guitars.
World.
Big Sky Brewing.
Yes. You know, in these Reverend, some of these Reverend demos, I wish they would just put it in drop tuning and then just turn it up and gain it out and start doing some metal or something. They always default to this kind of punky, pokey, bluesy rock stuff. Like, you know, as if to say, well, you know, you need to play this kind of music if you're going to get this guitar. And no, I don't buy that at all. That Telecaster pickup on the Buckshot, though, I find I have to really shove the noise gate all the way to the ceiling just about, because that thing will howl. It's loud. I might replace it with another Tele that's stacked or a double coil that'll humbuck at some period in time. It's a good pickup, but you know, single coils, you got your hands full. At least with the neck pickup, it's positioned in the way it's voiced that it gives me pretty much the same sound I get out of the neck, out of the bridge pickups on my other guitars, which is very interesting.
They do have a unique sound in those Reverend guitars. They all sort of have that, I don't know if you call it signature sound, you know, they got their own sound going on.
Well, you know, if you look at the artist list at the website, you're going to see a lot of metal players, and like Billy Corgan uses them, and somebody else who's real well known. Who is it? There's Reeves Gabrels, and I don't know what he plays, kind of music that is. But still, yeah, you can do pretty much anything on these guitars. And but I just tend to see that. That's why I'm remarking here on all these videos.
Where do you want to go next?
Well, my screen is blank for you. I can't even see what you got.
Sorry.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
There you
go. Huh. Wondering why that was. But there's one that's kind of funny is the one where Fluff riffs Beards and Gear. He gets this 9-string guitar. And that's actually kind of humorous. I mean, who needs a string guitar?
I think that's kind of my superhero, which is something more.
I mean, you know, it's like having a bass just combined with a guitar, essentially. They say you tune your low string to an F sharp. There's no reason just to not just go down to an E like you're tuning a bass. It is funny, though. Oh, and there it is. And that little thing about that amp sim, it's a good amp sim. And these people make some very nice looking plugins, compressors.
Today on Riff Spears and Gear.
They want $6.66 for an introductory price. I think I'll grab it. Okay. Deacon, you there? Deacon's computer might be giving him a little trouble. Sometimes it does this, maybe towards the end of the show. Oh, I see him moving his mouse. Let's see what happens. We might have some sound in a second. This is Pat Rabbit, and I'm here with Deacon John. And
can you hear me?
I can hear you now, yeah.
That was my script. Okay, we're going
to... Was that a pen?
Do this. What's that?
That was a pen? I can hear you now.
All right, so we're going to go to trying a nine-string guitar for the first time. Wrist, ears, and ear on YouTube. Here we go.
I check out and play my very first nine-string guitar. All right, here we go again. So what is in this box is kind of a mystery, but the story goes like this. I was on a live stream with my boy Adam from Schecter Guitar Research last week on Instagram, and someone asked me, have I ever played a nine string? To which Adam asked, yeah, I've never seen anything past a seven string on your channel. Why is that? And I thought, I don't know. I have played an eight string. I've never, ever played a nine string. And Adam was like, do you want it? So here we are. Now, I am not sure which specific nine string model in this box, but today, Dad's going to play a nine string for the very first time. So we should probably open this thing up. Got her open. See what we got. I'm holding onto the neck and it feels just massive. Okay, my first impressions are this feels a lot like Jared's Ormsby 18 string or whatever it was guitar, although not as heavy. That thing literally weighed probably 40 pounds. This is not 40 pounds. The neck feels a mile wide. I mean, look at that. Well, I suppose I should tune it up and then play it, plug it in. I should Google what these are even tuned to. Okay, so according to the internet, C sharp, F sharp, B, E, A, D, G, B, E. Okay. Okay, I got it all tuned up. This is crazy. Just visually, my right hand does not equal my left hand. I keep... I have a hard time picking the right string without consciously looking because I'm a string off, because it's based on feel of my left hand. I feel like I'm K-Mac's uglier bearded stepdad or something. Well, I guess let's see if I can come up with some kind of a tune with it. All right, so what do I think about my first experience with a nine string? It feels like playing a more compact bodied
I think Deacon had that. There we go. More computer stuff. You okay? Well, we'll be back with you with more insanity in just a minute.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. What's it doing, jumping onto mute for you all by itself?
I have a hard time picking the right string without consciously looking because I'm a string off. Because it's based on feel of my left hand. I feel like I'm K-Mac's uglier bearded stepdad or something. Well, I guess let's see if I can come up with some kind of a tune with it. All right, so what do I think about my first experience with a 9-string? It feels like playing a more compact-bodied bass guitar to me. If you're into really, really extreme, heavy, really low-tuned stuff, I would definitely say check out a 9-string. Try it before you buy it. Like, don't just order one having never tried one before. Although, if you're comfortable with, like, a 7-string, I could see you definitely being comfortable with this particular 9-string. Again, this is the only 9-string I have ever played, but the neck is thin enough, and I felt like I was able to get used to the 9-string. Dude, that's a lot of strings. And I don't know, it sounds pretty good. It's fun. I get the appeal now. I understand more of the appeal now than maybe when I used to a few years ago. Before, I just didn't get it. I thought it was dumb. I thought it was kind of hokey. But Steph from the Deftones explained it to me like, you know, it's just there's so much there. It's all there. It's like a piano. So wherever someone else is, I'll find you. And you can find anything with this range of notes available, which is a cool thing. Sounds pretty good. And overall, you know what? Not that bad. Thank you, Schecter, for letting me try my first 9-string. I really, really appreciate it. And I've really enjoyed this Damian Platinum guitar as well. I will link down below to one of these guitars if you want to check it out for yourself. And with that, you have been wonderful. I've been Fluff. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you next time. If you enjoyed the video that you just watched, please consider subscribing. It helps me, help you, and then in turn, you get more stuff to watch. And also, I have all sorts of stuff down in the description of this video. Sweetwater giveaway stuff. There's all sorts of links to all sorts of things. So consider checking that out as well, if you're going to hang. But if you don't hang, all good. I still love you.
What did you think of that?
It's just an embarrassment of riches. It's too much. You know, Toshi Nabasi. He's
annoyed, man.
I made a mistake.
Toshi Nabasi, who's a young Nigerian guy from Washington, D.C. area. He and two other guys have a band called Animals as Leaders. And they're brilliant. They're really gifted. And they both use 8-string guitars. So one guy's doing the bass duties while Tosin's doing his crazy guitar stuff, and on and on. They make it work, but as far as I know, I've never seen him use a 9-string. I don't know what you need 9 strings for. I don't know. It's funny.
But I think he was kind of tongue-in-cheek, you know. This guy's sort of joking around, yeah.
Yeah, he's like that. That's why I like to watch him. Now, look at this one. I made a mistake, an 8-string guitar story. Do we have enough time?
Let's see if we can play this. Yeah, play part of it. Anyway, here we go.
I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Today on Tricrow Studios, I kind of feel like the little boy there in E.T. Stupid hood. But today I kind of want to make this video. It's kind of a self-realization and maybe something that might be able to help someone out there who may be prospectively making this type of a purchase. Not that this was super expensive or anything. But I came to the realization that when it comes to 8-strings, yeah, I messed up. They're not my thing. So basically, I'll give you a get this stupid thing off. I'll give you a quick, really quick history and what potentially may be going on in your mind. And just out of my experience, potentially help you, but hopefully not completely sway you away. So basically, my history is primarily with 6-string guitars. I like a lot of people, I like blues, but I'm primarily hard rock slash metal player. So I'll tell you I like the blues and jazz a whole heck of a lot to kind of not dumb down myself, if that makes any sense, dumb myself down. But for years and years and years and years and years, I played 6-string guitars, absolutely loved them, didn't feel like I completely mastered it or anything, but really shied away from the 7-string scene because it, to me, seemed like a gimmick, and I didn't really like Korn. Then one day, I was shooting some b-ball outside of the school, and I picked up a 7-string. This is not the 7-string I picked up. I actually haven't even made a video with this particular 7-string. But I decided to jump into the whole 7-string thing. I picked up a 7-string for, I think it was like $180. It's just a cheap Ibanez. And the whole idea was, you know what, if I kind of like it, then I'll just hip shot bridge, Fishman Fluence, and Spurzel tuners, too, which I did. I really enjoyed it. It didn't seem really crazy. This going from down here seemed actually very natural. Opened up a whole bunch of creative possibilities in my mind. And actually, I think it forced me to realize that when I play in a drop tuning, I can make videos faster because it's easier. And it actually, like, down picking and that feels really good, and when you're recording sounds really good to yourself. So then I thought, god damn, I might as well pick up an 8-string because this is going to be the exact same thing. It's only natural to go from 7-strings to 8-strings, and having one more string tuned down lower, that's phenomenal. That's just excellent. I'll be able to be really heavy. And then I got this. And when I bought this, the person that I bought it.
Oh, that's it.
I'll see.
Say goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Listening to Revolution Radio.
What the heck is the truth, Jihad? Hey, I'm Kevin Barrett, host of Truth Jihad Radio. Federal prosecutors, Department of Homeland Security agents, and curious passersby often ask me, just what is this Truth Jihad thing anyway? Well, everybody knows what truth is, but jihad is a misunderstood term. Jihad means effort or struggle. The greater jihad is the struggle to be a better person, while the lesser jihad is the struggle to defend the community. Prophet Muhammad, peace upon him, did say that the best jihad is a word of truth flung in the face of a tyrant. And that's what we do here at Truth Jihad Radio! Every Friday, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, 5 to 7 Pacific, right here on Revolution Radio!
Are you interested in the paranormal?
Murder mystery. Real natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's iPhone, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Hey everyone, it's Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Thank you for tuning in to